This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another class in session, a little brighter. With me, I have a special friend.
Brian, yeah. How you doing, Brian? All right, let me unmute you real quick.
Yeah.
Hear you just fine.
Okay, man. This is unofficially a Valorant month. We had Sean earlier in the month, and we spent another last week kind of talking about performance. But this week, I'm actually very looking forward to it because we have you. One of the biggest thing with environment art and at least any type of 3D content creation is starts with the concept department. And I think what's great is that having you here is kind of highlight a lot of that side of how actually an environment gets started. But before that, do you mind kind of introducing yourself, like a brief background of where you're from and where you're hidden, all that beautiful background information?
Yeah. So I started doing concept back in 2003. First game company was at Insomniac. But before that, I went to school at Art Center, studied illustration. I started in 1999 and then graduated in 2002. Prior to that, I was actually in a totally different field. I was in the science field, namely biology. And I've worked there in that field for 2 years as a biotech researcher. We were, at that time, we were working on the uncloning, or at least sequencing the human genome project. I don't know if you guys heard of that, it's way back. But that was in the very beginning of that project. So I worked in it for 2 years and something didn't feel right. I felt that, you know, games was something that I wanted to do. So that's why I attended Art Center. So after Art Center, I went there for about 4 years and landed a job at Insomniac. I worked there for about 5.5 years. And that was my first game company. So I really wanted to stretch my wings. And I went into animation, concept for that, did concept art for that, which was a very different experience. And after that, went back to the games again, worked at Naughty Dog for Uncharted 2. After that project, went back, got another opportunity at animation at Disney Image Movers with Doug Chang. He was running a department over there, working for a Disney project. At the time, it was the Yellow Submarine that got canceled. And unfortunately, the studio also shut down. So went back into games. I came back down to LA, worked at Spark Unlimited on Lost Planet 3, and that's where I met Brandon. And worked there for about, you know, 3.5 years after the project. And then went into Amazon Game Studios, where they were just starting a game division. So that was pretty exciting. Was there about for 4 years, worked on various projects, the most recent project that on Amazon was Breakaway, but unfortunately that got canceled. So so Section was a art outsource studio. So that was a service company, and I was a visual development director there. So I had a team of 10 people, 10 artists under me. And we served different clients for different projects. For example, like Riot was one of our clients. So we did concepts for them. Whatever request they had, we did for that. Treyarch did a lot of the Call of Duty Black Ops concepts. So it was a good variety, and it was a very different workflow than what I was used to, because I was on the client side for most of my career, and then now I'm on the service. So that was a really good experience. And after that, that studio unfortunately had to close down about a year and a half later. So that's when I joined Riot, which is where I'm at currently. And I worked on Valorant. So that's kind of the gist of my career.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wide swath, man. And we had some overlap, you know. Obviously, we met at Spark, and then although we didn't work at Section together, we kind of know the same people.
Yeah.
So I think one of the questions that, going back to concept art, right? Obviously, you had a passion for it, and I actually determine you as one of the best environment concept guys I know, because there's a lot of environment concept people, obviously, in the industry, and I've worked with obviously a lot since, you know, being in the environment art production pipeline. Naturally, we talk to the concept team a lot to run ideas, and the ones that separates, in my opinion, from average to the best ones have been the ones that understand at least the process of game environments. So even at a senior level, there's a lot of environment concept guys that don't understand, or engals that don't understand that process, so that they come up with pretty pictures, but then when you try to break it down in the environment, it's just not practical or it doesn't translate well. Was this something that you had to learn, or was it something that naturally came to you because you experiment with 3D as well?
Well, thanks for the compliments, first of all. I think a lot of it comes from the how I was initially trained right out of school. When I got out of Art Center and got a job at Insomniac, they didn't put me into concept art full time right away. They had me do that part time, but they also went to train me in environment art. So I had to learn 3D because, you know, it was a small team, and at the time, I think there were only about 50 people when I joined, and they needed a lot of help as well to also help contribute to building levels. So they trained me in Maya and also how to work in the engine at the time to help build assets. Now, it wasn't a very, you know, glorious task. You know, I was doing mostly prop building and stuff. And then eventually I went into environment art, 3D. So I think that's where I learned most of the nuances of building for a level in 3D, and learning all the limitations, and also understanding what 3D environment art entails. All the limitations and then stuff that you could get away with. So I think all that stuff helped me cognizant of all the shortcomings and benefits of 3D. And from there, I'm able to apply it to my concept, and I still do. Like even now, when I start, you know, concepting a level. I do these really rough sketches, but after I get to a certain point, then I'll actually build a blackout based on the designer blackout. So I'll build a blackout, the art blackout, which is, you know, which has prettier silhouettes on top of the designer mesh. And from there, then I'll draw over my own blackout. And then, and that process is really useful because it's very useful for the 3D artists, but it's also useful for the designers. So they could actually validate to see if the art blackout matches or is in line with their design blackout, because the design blackout is very important. So, so having those, having the marriage between those two things really helps speed up the whole process and makes it overall efficient.
So I think this is where a perfect time to actually pull up some of your ArtStation work on Valorant, and we can kind of go through the thinking process for each piece. So when we talked to Sean, and especially this month talking about Valorant, what I love about Valorant is that it actually leverages a lot of game development cheating to still look good and run really well on 10-year-old computers. And a lot of that is has to do with good planning on both the 2D and 3D content pipeline, but especially on the 2D, because obviously level designers, I don't know how much experience you've had with level designers or working with level designers, but level designers always liked flat walls and flat floors. They don't like anything organic. They like perpendicular lines and nothing, and at most maybe 45 degree angles.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of work to make that look good. Not saying impossible, but it's difficult. But people or projects like Valorant that does it well, Counter-Strike is another example, or most multiplayer games, to be honest, that do really well, have that very flat look, but putting the details in the right places. So how much, you know, I think once you pull up some of the screenshot, we can look at that as an example. How much was that at the pre-production for you and the team to kind of decide early on, like, hey, we're obviously limited on details, but how can we make that look interesting into a style?
Well, first off, no, we were very intentional on designing the spaces. So, for example, if you notice Valorant, a lot of the detail at player height is minimized. And we tend not to have too much detail in the sight of where the player is going to shoot. If you look at the walls, for example, in the screenshots, it's pretty plain, but it has some detail to kind of grab interest. And the reason we do that is because, you know, when our player stands in front of the wall, they're going to pop out pretty obviously, right? And that's, you know, a lot of the designs that we do are very player focused. We always think of the player first on what they're experiencing, and also giving that clarity to the player so that, you know, if, you know, Valorant becomes, you know, competitive, that's really important as well. So we keep the, you know, keep the line of sight and player as a player point of view pretty simple and clean, very graphic. But also that's due to the, you know, engine limitations and the frame rate. We want to keep the frame rate down. So that's the direction that we want to choose as well. But all the details that you see is up on top of the gameplay space. If you look at Ascent, right? That's the Venice level. So a lot of the details or the filigree of the buildings are up on top, where the bottom part, it's pretty clean for the most part, right? Like, we'll have some, you know, textural detail on there, but it's not a lot to distract the player to what they're from their objectives. Am I showing the art station, or are you showing the art station? Sorry.
Why don't you go ahead and show it so that it's better for us to follow along? But in the meantime, what I can do is I can pull up Ascent. And so people have some ideas. What are you talking about?
Okay,
but yeah, at any point, go ahead and start sharing. There's a lot of levels named name Ascent.
Can you guys see this?
Yeah.
Okay. So just to give a little disclaimer, when I first came in, the game was already in pretty good progress. So the stuff that I posted is only the stuff I can really show, which is mostly on Split. That's the Neo Tokyo and Old Tokyo level. And I did some stuff on Ascent as well, but not a whole lot. I mean, I did a lot of paintovers, but in terms of showing more exciting stuff, there wasn't really much exciting stuff as Split. Because Split was something that I helped start ground up for, at least for the Kingdom side. Okay. So let me show you this here. So this is Split. And this is the attacker spawn. This is where the attackers spawn from their side. And this one showcases the plaza of what the kingdom environment is. And Kingdom is really like this, you know, big corporation. If you think of it like Apple or Amazon, there is this very clean architecture, very this is kind of more the front-facing architecture that Kingdom has. It's kind of like, you know, it's a very consumer-heavy feel, like kind of like what you see today at Apple stores, very minimalistic, very modern. So this was a paint over of that level because we wanted to see how it would look like just to sell the idea of what this Kingdom Corporation looks like. And this is another paint over as well. This is one of the earlier paint over. So we wanted to have, you know, kind of showcase like some sort of garden or plaza. And that's a train station right here.
So what's the process like usually for the students out there who haven't been in a level team? You get your direction, a combination of different disciplines. Can you kind of walk us through that, like the initial pitch idea to kind of sitting with the level environment team, trying to help picture what they're thinking?
Yeah, so the pitch idea usually starts with the, you know, we meet the creative director and we go through the different pillars of the level, and then we all brainstorm. Okay, what is this level going to be? You know, how it's going to look like? What does it need to have that matches the narratives? And then from there, we start doing like a lot of the brainstorm sketches. You know, of what the level is. But you know, already there's a designer block mesh, so we have to follow that pretty closely, because one thing about working on a tactical shooter versus like something like Uncharted, for example, you know, we have to really respect the right angles in the boxes, right? Because those boxes, those hit spaces, those are really important when it comes to tactical shooters, because you can't have anything that's rounded. Like, for example, like this edge here, you can't have anything that's kind of sticking out or irregular, right? As you would say, like Uncharted, where things are pretty modeled pretty accurately to the real world, which has, it doesn't have perfect straight edges, right? But for tactical shooters, you must have a clean edge, right? So that limitation itself is very challenging to, it can be challenging to concept around. But what we do is we try to, you know, think of creative ways to, for example, like maybe we could have some really cool details in the edges, but also retain the clean straight edge, right? Any textual details or designs within this box that could help break that boxy shape, because you know as artists we don't like boxy shapes, or anything that we could pop out of this box that doesn't interfere with gameplay, that's valid too. So like for this is a scent. This is the bee spike site. And this one, you know, this one was again like these arches here where the player hides inside when someone plants a bomb. That has to be straight, right? But anything above here, like all this detail, is fine because the player would never go up here. Because most of the gameplay details focus on this area right here. So the place that we could break the rules is anything that's above game players, gameplay space.
Did you find a good percentage that felt right as you guys were developing more levels and finding the language of the game, what you can get away with, what details to put on the player path versus above the player height that doesn't interfere with gameplay? Like, how much back and forth did you have with designers' environment when they couldn't agree with the non-straight edge? Or, you know, of course your department's going to do your best to avoid that, but there's always going to be like, oh, can't really have this. If you have like a specific example to kind of talk about, that'd be great.
Yeah, there's a really, I mean, there's quite a few examples of that. You know, the designers are very flexible, which is great. You know, right? Like it's a very collaborative environment. And you know, they also respect what the artists have to say as well. So it's not like a, you know, like a set in stone type of rule where, okay, well, you gotta make this box exactly the way it is. No. If we could find solutions, like, so for example, there's this one area on Split. One of the towers has a really weird, the architecture had a very weird angle. He comes to his door, but it has this weird angle where it kind of points to the corridor where the players would come in. And from an architectural point of view, that didn't make much sense, right? Like, say, well, hey, can we like kind of change this, whatever? But then, like, the designer, you know, he explained that no, we need this for gameplay, and he kind of demonstrate like why we need that. And okay, well, at that point, like, okay, well, we have to, as a, you know, our team, we have to compromise. Like, well, we just have to think of something to make sense of that, right? And at the end, it works, worked pretty well. You know, it wasn't obviously, you know, weird visually, you know, because we found solutions by maybe putting some vents on top just to kind of help, you know, alleviate some of the odd angles and so forth. So that's, you know, that's one example. Another example sometimes where we would suggest like, hey, what if we move this rectangular block to this side? You know, sometimes they'll actually say, okay, yeah, we'll try that. And then as long as it, you know, doesn't deviate from the main gameplay elements, or doesn't change gameplay where it gives a huge advantage to, you know, the defender side or attacker side, then yeah, they'll actually, you know, help, you know, collaborate on that effort. So it's a lot of back and forth, right? And also, like, you know, maybe towards the end of the production of the level, you know, sometimes they'll make last minute changes. And as you can see, like in the updates, when you're playing Valorant, sometimes you'll see stuff change around. Like in this screenshot that you're showing, when you go outside from a vent, you know, we used to have this big wall right there, but now it's like, now they change it to, if you see that big box right there, where the vent room comes out, well, we removed that wall and now we put smaller boxes because it just felt better and less claustrophobic. So don't do that in real time while the game is live. So, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think one of the things I think students don't realize is how collaborative building environment is, and one of the things, even if you're working well as an environment artist with a designer, designers always thinking that creatively we're more flexible in whatever gameplay needs they have, right? Versus vice versa, right? There's like, this is how the game plays and this is how it plays great. Therefore, think of something, draw something, leave me alone, right? I mean, that's just a very brute way of saying, gameplay is key and you guys creatively can think of something no matter what. In some cases, we can propose something because visually, you know, the inspiration for or the motivation for changing things visually looks better, but then it might give that designer an idea for gameplay. And I've seen cases like that personally, where that have worked. But in most cases, the pushback is very expected from design always because they play tested this block out level for forever. In some cases, environment team or art team comes on board. So they're very tied to it. And,
The way I think the way I look at it, especially for this type of game is that, you know, gameplay is going to be king. And then art is something that's, it's almost secondary in a way where, you know, the gameplay is always going to trump everything because you want to have, player experience is always first, right? You can't sacrifice bad gameplay for good art, right? Because the gameplay is the key. So the way I like to kind of think of it is that, you know, if gameplay was the kind of the skeleton and then art is like the skin that goes on top of, of the level. And then whatever we could do as artists to kind of help push that, then that's awesome. But there are times where things are not, they're not flexible. So we have to think of creative solutions to address both the design blockout, but also address the art, right? It's not like a win-win or lose-lose situation, but it's just a collaboration. It's, you know, it's a team effort. It's not about, you know, as an artist, it's not about you or, you know, like, hey, I want to get my cool concept in there. No, it's nothing like that. It's actually very collaborative. And that's something I think a lot of, when students go into the field, like, you'll see right away that it's a very it's almost like a 50-50 collaboration. Well, maybe 60-40. Designers always have a, you know, they have more of a say, right? But art is really more to kind of help support that vision. Help support by bringing those visuals online, right? But in games, like the game designs, you know, that's probably the highest priority.
So let's talk about the one of the biggest things with students is that unless they have a concept ready or they're looking for ways to kind of create a portfolio piece, either 3D or 2D, is that they don't, what's not being taught a lot, at least for 3D artists, is the process of coming up with an idea and fleshing it out before making it.
So if you can again provide a little bit of your thinking process, like one of the levels of Valorant, maybe a creative director has an idea, but what is the next steps that you usually take to gather references, to break things down through shapes, then color, then material and textures, to help guide environment artists when you hand it off? I think that part of the process would be greatly helpful.
Yeah. So after, you know, like I mentioned before, after we meet with the creative director and all the stakeholders, you know, they give us that kind of So they give us a high level, like, you know, let's say for this level, split, like, you know, say, oh, we want a kind of Neo Tokyo corporation. So that's kind of a high level. And then for us artists, now that's our job to kind of research, okay, what does it mean by kind of a Neo Tokyo corporation? That's attached to kingdom theme. So we do a lot of research and come up with different shape languages by, you know, after doing research, we do a bunch of thumbnails, you know. So actually, let me share that. Share a screen view again. Okay. On the art station.
When you talk about shape languages, do you talk about mostly about playing with primitive shapes, simple shapes, or do you go just pen on paper and just plotting it down? I guess you're about to show that.
So we go, you know, we go with different shapes as well. Let's see, let's go with this one here. For example, like, you know, well, in this page, we're trying to figure out the, let's see, I'm trying to, okay, here we go. Let me try to expand this. There you go. So for this, particular page, we were trying to figure out what the architecture shape language is for Split, right? What would a kind of front facing consumer style building or residential building look like? So here, like, this is a page to kind of explore different languages. And as you can see, the languages are very kind of more simple, modern architecture influenced shapes, kind of boxy, but then you have different tonal breakups. And these shapes work because it also fits into the gameplay requirements, which needs to be right angles, right? We can't have any curved structures at least at this point. So this is like a page to kind of show the designers, hey, this is what we're looking at, but it also fits the visual language for the art. Let's go back here. Another one is, so another way to start this as well is, so you can find it here. Okay. So this is the very early ideation step where you see the block mesh here. This is a designer block mesh. So here on this side's already been kind of figured out. This is the old site, but the new site was a total blank slate. So that was something that I had spent a lot of time on in the beginning to kind of figure out what this space looks like. And then from there, like I'll do like really quick, you know, loose sketches like this to kind of show what this area can look like, but also spells out some of the themes. So it's just line value. And our art director, Moby Frankie, he, I don't know if you know that name, but he's really well known, really awesome guy. He worked on Team Fortress 1 and 2. He was the art director for that. So, you know, a lot of the things that he likes to push is just to do tonal, like black and white value studies, because he doesn't really care about color at this point, because, you know, the tonal studies of values that informs a lot of information. It's for the foundation of the shape languages and designs. And then from there, we'll add color on top. But they want us to focus mostly on just sketches and figuring out the shapes. So this one here, this is something that I would initially do for at the beginning of a level that I work on. And then from there, once I get kind of a more solid refined concept, then I'll go ahead and actually model some of the concepts that I did in Maya and then import it into the engine so that the artists and designers, they could actually run around and see these concepts in the space itself that I model. So that has been very successful in terms of getting quick validation on whether some of the shapes work or not for the gameplay. And as an example for this one, you know, initially I built this half right here, and we didn't have, like, good thing we did that early because we found that it was feeling kind of claustrophobic, so we had to knock down some of the buildings. So only like a couple of tall buildings stood out and the rest were pretty low. And also the architectural style changed when I did this one here. So it changed about halfway to what you see right now, kind of more modern architecture. So that's the way that that's kind of like the process that we kind of go back and forth. So from the thumbnail stage, so once we figure out the shape language and thumbnails, then we, you know, show, you know, art director and the artist and say, hey, what do you think of this? They say that's cool. Then they'll choose, you know, a direction and they say, oh, we like this thumbnail. Go ahead and refine that. So we go ahead and refine that and make it more detailed. So eventually you're building from something that's really loose. We call that kind of a wide exploration to something that's more deep, meaning that you get more in depth into more detail. So we go wide to deep. And from the refinement, then we start adding different colors and see, like, okay, well, would this material work? You know, would this color work? Is it too noisy for gameplay and so forth? So we start doing paint overs at some point. Once the 3D artists, they take our concepts and they start blocking our concepts in, then once we get a pretty good grayscale block mesh, which represents the overall concept, then they'll start adding colors and materials. And that's when we kind of figure out, like, which colors work and which colors don't. Now, if you see in the screenshots right now, like, you see, like, a lot of the walls are pretty toned down, right? Like, there's no loud colors or anything, because if you have a loud color, you're not going to see the player. It's going to be too distracting. People are going to get mad. They're going to, like, you know, go on Reddit and say, hey, man, this, what's up with this? And so we want to avoid that, right? So we want to keep the colors kind of more towards neutral, but with little, you know, accent pops. But as you can see here in this screenshot, like, all the walls are pretty plain, and we do have some, you know, tonal breakups and with more interesting shapes. And then occasionally we'll have some detail on the walls, which are probably not important to gameplay. So that's kind of like the overall design for environments, or is the overall philosophy that we're trying to bring in for Valorant when we build environments. And also the if you look at the breakups, like that two-tone water, you know, sometimes we'll line that up to where the head height is, so players could instinctively kind of land for headshots. So stuff like that will, you know, integrate in the concept and to environments.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. And of course, like, you know, it's heavily tested by the designers as well, and they'll give suggestions on moving things around as well.
So yeah, like that. I mean, there's a couple of things there that I feel like a lot of developers don't even think about, is
they toned it up. Well, it seems like it's like a 40 to 60% range that you guys constantly are staying within, super neutral. Accents, it seems like doors or second level like this one, hazard lines. Gameplay specific colors used for accents for players to move around quicker. That makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you see those two yellow things, those ascenders, no, we mark those yellow because that's obviously something that you need to get up there, right? So what's more attention grabbing other than yellow to kind of like bring you up there? So a lot of these accents that you see around the level are ways to kind of help the player, or at least to guide the player to where they need to go. Around.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things that like environment artists have to do. I think within a reason, a lot of students or people are getting in the industry, they concentrate their portfolio to making things look really pretty, but not very practical sometimes, especially now. Like there's just so many tools to make things like a million polys, just a corner, just to make it look good and ridiculous. But I think now that there's so many candidates with good looking portfolio, studios are kind of forced to be more picky and a lot more nitpicking on details of, well, would this actually be functional?
I think, you know, just to add to that, I think, you know, if you're coming out of school, obviously, you know, you want your portfolio to be really polished, right? But it also helps to have a sketchbook showing your process. Because a lot of times when you have that really fancy portfolio out there, this is more for I'm speaking more for concept arts. Because concept art, you know, it's not just about making something look really beautiful and pretty. Actually, that's only a very small percentage. The main percentage is that I say 60-70% of the time, you're going to be doing a lot of problem solving, like figuring out how the space will work, while given the limitations of the level design, right? Like how do you design out this box where it has to be a box? So that's where you have to get very creative in terms of how do you problem solve a visual language where you have a lot of limitations. But I think also it's just, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I'm a veteran, a lot of my day goes from really quick sketches, just really quick solves for each area. Like an artist would come up and say, hey, you know, Brian, I need a quick paint over, a quick sketch of this area. And you'll have that done within like an hour or a couple hours, right? Just to unblock them, because some of the environment artists, they have a problem to figure out what that point is. And as a job as a concept artist is kind of help support the 3D artists to unblock them, right? So a lot of them is just it's almost like you're the I like to think of it as the you guys watch Saving Private Ryan, like, you know, that medic that kind of goes around and kind of patches everyone up. So that's, you know, that's kind of like my job sometimes every week. Like I'm kind of going around each artist and say, hey, you know, what do you need? Like, oh, you need a sketch over? Okay, here you go. Like, or you need like, a quick 5-minute draw over, you know, stuff that kind of helps make the whole production line go smoothly while solving the problem at the same time. So that's, you know, in my experience, that's always been the case where, you know, like back at Amazon, like I was the only environment concept artist, and I'll be supporting five artists. And, each of them would have different requests. So all my sketches were like done within an hour or maybe like a couple hours at the most. You know, it's never any like really cool painting unless it's the beginning of the project where I'm doing Blue Sky. Then that's the best part, is when you do the really fun paintings. But other than that, like a lot of times you're just doing paint overs.
Yeah, and I can share at least the other side of that as an environment guy that I'm in the editor all the time. I'm trying to think about technical specifications and making sure, you know, translating the idea to work with the designer and constantly, you know, working and collaborating and finding a compromise, right? A lot of that is that it's not mm-hmm. just listening to the designer, you know, because he's... or she is human too, right?
Yep.
So the idea is not to argue, but to kind of inspire ideas that person didn't initially think of, because creatively they're not looking around at real world situations as much as we are with the architecture or environments. Whenever we walk out, they're just thinking of... the best way I can describe it is that they're just thinking about getting from A to B, while we as artists are kind of taking a look around at the scenery of what does A to B look like.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I feel a lot of designers who have initial idea could have their blinders on and not really anticipate a lot of that experience besides just gameplay, because visually it's part of the experience as well. So with students and I guess with you, right, you know, when I'm going to concept artists, I'm looking for exploring ideas that I haven't thought of before, and a sketch is the best way to do it, because, you know, for me, the block that out in 3D has its advantages, but it takes way longer, right? It everything is just a time consuming process. And the concept guy, mm-hmm. you guys have just, you know, I would say more than half your job is about researching and constantly building that encyclopedia in your head to kind of pull from. And so naturally I feel concept artists are just better with coming ideas faster. And when you're in a time crunch, why not rely on that more so than you figuring out how to make things run and like taking the time to do research and development. So the sketches have been very helpful in my recent jobs, because it's just, oh, okay. Yeah, this is great. I can describe something. You can come up with a cool idea, and then, yeah, I can run with that. And we go back and forth when it comes to shape and language and color theory and all that. And so it's more iterative. And I've been actually preferring that being an environment artist. I would say going forward, like what I do see is actually an issue that's been coming up a lot with, and I do agree with you, like since there's so much, and what you say is not just for concept portfolios, it's actually for like 3D environment portfolios as well, is that students need to start showing their thinking process. A little peek behind the scene, because it can't just be a pretty picture anymore. There's just so many pretty pictures that get submitted at Riot, let's say, right? And for you,
anywhere. Yeah, anywhere. I can tell you a story. When I applied to NIDA, I worked with Rob Ruppel. I don't know if you know Rob Ruppel. Amazing artist. Also a really good friend of mine. But when I first met Rob, you know, he was the art director on Chart 2. And he was in charge of the whole concept department. So I went in there, you know, being all nervous and stuff. Like I had my really pretty portfolio, but then but he also requested to bring a couple of sketchbooks. And say, oh, okay. Well, good thing I had like a couple of sketchbooks of all my past work. So when he looked at, you know, like he was looking through my portfolio, my polished portfolio. He didn't really say, okay, yeah, that's cool. And then he started looking at my sketchbook, and that's when a lot of conversations started to happen. And later on, he told me like the reason that he wanted to look at a sketchbook is that he wants to see how the thought process is, you know, how I think when I've solved these visuals, right? because he's a, like, you know, he, like you said, like, he sees a lot of really pretty portfolios, but then a lot of times when it comes to problem solving, the, you know, design and just drawing in general, a lot of students, they kind of, they don't do so well in that department. They just do really nice pictures. But when you have to break down your painting, your own painting, and say, hey, you know, what's this prep going to be? What's this? You know, things kind of break down. So that all kind of goes back to having a solid foundation as well. Having a solid foundation meaning that, you know, your design foundation has to be really good. Your drawing skills, your line and value sketches have to be really good. Has to be pretty solid. Because concept art is not only about just making pretty pictures, but it's also, if you think about it, it's also about communication, right? You're communicating not only to the audience, but you're communicating to your own team when you're trying to solve a certain situation on a level. So that's really important. So if you guys have, you know, sketchbooks that you could show, that kind of show your processes and a process on how you came up with that final idea, that's really good. That's something that a lot of companies want to see these days. Because, you know, if you look at ArtStation, there's a lot of artwork that's really good out there, right?
Yeah.
And everyone has really high skill. But I think what will separate you know, one artist from another is how they filter that process down.
I completely agree with you. I think some of the examples.
Yeah. So like these, about, yeah. Yeah. These are sketches, right? That I showed when I was interviewing. So these are really like stuff that they do want to look at. And it's a good conversation starter during an interview as well. No, they're not really pretty, but, it gets the idea across on how you got there.
Yeah, I think exactly. We're in the age of ArtStation, right? There's literally thousands of pretty pictures being generated every day on the front page for every discipline in the art department, right? Not just concept, but 3D as well. Characters, environment, you know, you break it down even further. It's insane. An insane amount of talent. But what's very, I would say very scarce still is that, like what I'm showing right now, just a technical breakdown. And on the environment side, just understanding gameplay, creating art for gameplay. And the stuff that we mentioned before, like the climbing rope, ladders, eye level, accent lines, right, for headshots. If you can convey that and show a potential employer like Riot or any of these companies that you think like that, that you understand that, a pretty picture won't usually tell you that unless you have a breakdown. And so more important than ever that you're going to have that going forward, especially a student going into the industry. You know, a pretty picture plus showing that you understand game art and not just art.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I suggest to some of the students that I used to teach is to, if you're coming up with your own project, pretend you could actually take an existing game and kind of retheme the visuals, right? You know, it's like, for example, like Mass Effect, or you can make Mass Effect into a pirate game, but having that pirate theme, you know, you have to readdress all the design elements and all that stuff. So that's something that's something that you could try, where you could put a narrative to your designs. And that's something that I try to do a lot when I'm designing a prop or design environments, is I try to add a narrative to everything I do, because having some sort of narrative or story behind it really helps ground your design, but also helps push you to making that design more unique, if that makes sense, right? Rather than feeling generic. And that story could be like a personal story, or it could be something that, you know, something from your own experience and so forth.
Well, Brian, I want to thank you for your time for coming on. It's been
thanks for having me on.
Great talking to you, as always.
Yeah,
we'll catch up some more. I think during quarantine, I need to call people more. It's getting so boring at home.
I know. So,
let's stay connected.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for having me on. We'll catch up some more time.